Coming today on Negotiate Your Best Life with Rebecca Zung.
But this becomes a great point of leverage, because I'll tell you, nothing incenses a narcissist more than when you're not giving them equally long, bizarre text, like those long, long text messages that require you to click again to see the whole thing.
Right.
So what happens is, if you give brief responses like, okay, let's talk later, they're going to just give you verbal diarrhea, which is great.
So the big questions are these. How can we navigate and negotiate every situation in our lives, in our career, in our businesses, in our relationships, and even with ourselves for our own self-worth? In other words, what if you could win every time and have no losers? Let's face it, we're not negotiating just to buy a car or for a pay raise. We are negotiating for living in every aspect of our lives. How can we do that powerfully, successfully, and victoriously? Those are the questions, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Rebecca Zung, and welcome to the time where you negotiate your best life.
Hi, this is Rebecca Zung, top 1% divorce attorney and the best-selling author of the books Negotiate Like You Matter and Breaking Free, a Step-by-Step Divorce Guide. And today, I have a really special treat. It's part three of the series that we've been doing on how to negotiate with a narcissist. Today, it's going to be do's and don'ts of negotiating with a narcissist. So you're definitely going to want to watch all the way till the end. And I am here again with my special guest, Dr. Romani, who is the foremost authority on narcissism in the United States and maybe even in the world. And and it's been such a pleasure. I've learned so much from her about narcissists and narcissism. And you're going to learn even more today. So thanks for joining us. So, Dr. Romani, we talked about, you know, the toxicity of narcissists, the types of narcissists. Mm-hmm. We've talked about litigating with a narcissist and what you're getting into with that. And now we're going to talk about the do's and don'ts. One of the things that I say that people should definitely do is document, document.
Yes,
I know you tell your clients
same
that, too.
Thing. You know, it's a good place to start, because I think it is, if it's the only do you do, you're in good shape. And I don't just use this document recommendation just in marriages and close relationships and divorces. I make it a strong suggestion in workplace issues, in, you know, other kinds of disputes you may be having, sometimes even in family issues. And it's interesting, my motivation for documentation, as you can imagine, it's to substantiate a legal argument, yes. But it's also to help with your sanity. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes people are like, no, maybe that didn't happen. I'm like, no, sweetie, in your journal on January 5th, it happened. You wrote it down. They're like, oh, yeah. So, you know, the narcissistic relationships are absolutely impacted by euphoric recall. People strangely are able to remember the good stuff about these really bad relationships. The documentation sometimes becomes a place where you can say, yeah, no, this isn't healthy.
Well, it's that, and I would add to that that the reason, another really good reason to document is that narcissists are pathological liars.
Mm-hmm.
So you will catch them in lies if you document. Mm-hmm. And I've won entire cases on people's notes. So, you know, and there's really no limit to how detailed you can be. It's really kind of just how meticulous you want to be. Because, you know, if they're late for picking up the kids, if they're late for a payment on something, if they made a snide remark, if they wrote an email that was not reflective of a conversation and they tried to pawn it off as a conversation that you had, something like that, you know, just any little thing that just seems off to you, just take note of it. Because, you know, when you ask the question, how is he or she getting away with this, which you're going to ask that, and I always say there's no like divorce fairies that come out and and stop people from doing things. So, you know, they won't get away with it if you end up in front of the judge and you have the proper documentation.
It is a, you know, I always say to people, you know, want to know how you know you're being gaslighted or in a relationship with a narcissist? I'll tell you. You, in arguments, you put text messages in front of them. You feel compelled to record conversations, and you feel the need to write long novels of emails to them to explain your feelings. You're doing that because you're not being heard, and because you are being gaslighted so much that you have to show them this proof. This is taking this to another level and for a different reason. Again, it's to provide that substantiation. And it's not just about writing things down. It's about saving everything. You must save every text message. You must save every voicemail. You must save every email. Nothing can go. You're going to start to feel like a hoarder before this is done, but you're going to have to do it because sometimes it's just that one message. And one thing I do also strongly encourage people to do, print it all out. And there's actually apps out there that allow you to download all your text messages and print them all out. Create a printout because in case something blows up with your phone or your email server or something, then at least you have the hard evidence. It's got to have dates, times, all of that. Print it all out. You might even want to get into like a once a month cycle where you print everything out and put it someplace safe.
Yeah. A couple of things I want to just make a comment on what you just said. Number one is for your own sake too. Remember that every text and every email and every writing is a potential trial exhibit. So if you don't want to see it again,
thank you.
Do not write it.
Yep, I love that.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, it will, if you don't want to see it again at a very inopportune time, meaning like in front of the judge, you know, where you're now having to explain and defend yourself, don't write it. Don't send it.
But this becomes a great point of leverage because I'll tell you, nothing incenses a narcissist more than when you're not giving them equally long, bizarre text, like those long, long text messages that require you to click again to see the whole thing.
Right.
So what happens is if you give brief responses like, okay, let's talk later, they're going to just give you verbal diarrhea,
which is great.
So it's just you get two for the price of one.
Yeah.
You don't engage and put your stuff down where you don't want it to be, and you get them just sort of putting it all out there, which you now have for later. So that's good.
Mm-hmm. And the other point I wanted to make about what you said was, you know, you feel this need to show them and defend it, you know, prove to them that what they said was wrong, whatever. Don't do that.
No, I agree. Yep.
Don't do that. That's your leverage. Don't resist the urge to want to do that in the moment and prove to them. So listen, people, you're dealing with narcissists. Narcissists are not going to accept constructive feedback and make changes to their behavior based on their on your feedback and reflect on it and all of that stuff. It's not happening. So you can show them a text message that directly counteracts exactly what they just said, proves that they're lying, and somehow they will manipulate that away that it's not a lie. So, and even if it makes no sense whatsoever, I mean, sometimes they say things that make no sense whatsoever. But just resist that urge to want to show them the leverage. That would be a don't. You know, create your leverage. Do that, but don't give it away too early.
And it's a classic, it's a poker game. You would not ever sit in a casino and say, or a card game and say, look at my cards, everyone.
Yeah.
Take a look. And now let's bet. So it's the same thing. It's just playing poker. What are some of the other big do's?
So I would say that you want to involve people that are going to be able to support you for sure. So you want to have a definite support system, but not people that are going to fan the flames and that sort of thing. So, you know, have a support team around you. Get a really good lawyer who understands narcissism. We talked about that in the last video too. So if you haven't watched that video, you should go check it out.
Get a really good psychologist or therapist who understands narcissism as well. Like I cannot stress this one enough. It's not because I'm trying to create business for my field, but this idea of a support system, a lot of the people around you cannot have this conversation. If they've never experienced it, I'm amazed at how many people, my friends even, read my books and they're like, this seems really interesting, but I don't get it. Now you can, it doesn't bother me because it's like, okay, I get that you don't get it. But if I was going through a narcissistic relationship, I would feel very gaslighted and lost. So the beauty of therapy with a therapist who understands narcissism is they get it. And the kinds of support and feedback you'll get with them from them will not leave you feeling that you've lost your mind, but rather that you feel understood and supported. So I do think you need to choose those and you have to choose where you have the conversations. Not everyone in your your network can hear the conversation.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah. Anything else you'd say about that?
So I would. The other thing is to use video for depositions.
Interesting.
You know, a lot of people say, well, that's more expensive. Now we have to pay for a videographer. Well, okay, I'm going to tell you, you're already paying a court reporter. You're already paying your lawyer. You're going through this expense. You know, don't cheap out and not spend an extra couple $100 for the videographer because what happens with the depositions is the court reporter can only take down, you know, what is your name? My name is, you know, John Adams or whatever. And then it just, so when you see it on the page, it just looks
very
like
different.
Type.
I agree.
But what narcissists will do is they're going to try to rile you up. They're going to try to unnerve you. So they're going to make faces. They're going to make little things under their breath.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to try to do things that upset you.
Yep.
Things that they know are upsetting you. They're going to pass notes to their lawyer that so that it makes it look like they're saying something about you and you're wondering what's going on with that. And so, you know, my normal listeners will know, like, I just say, like, they're just less likely to act like a complete jackass if you have, because, you know, that's how they can act, especially the grandiose ones and the malignant ones, right? So using video for deposition can definitely help to rein in their behavior.
Any other do's?
Let me see. I have gather as much supporting documentation on everything as possible. So you're going to want to, you know, do your research. Do your research for your side. So one of the things that I say all the time is when you're dealing with a narcissist, people tend to be so focused on defending against what that narcissist is doing that they forget to prepare their own case.
That's right. That's interesting.
And you know, it's just like in football, if all you have is a great defense and you have no offense, then you have no case.
Right.
And if your only case is just tearing down the other person, you aren't going to get anything that you want.
So, you know, and here's where it's interesting, because people who have been in narcissistic relationships who may not have already done the reading and gotten the education, they do what anyone would do if they feel they're being attacked or their reality is being doubted. They defend themselves. So after the life history of this relationship where all they do is defend themselves, it can be often very difficult to turn that switch off.
Right.
And even in the work I do in working with survivors of narcissistic abuse, it's that don't defend yourself part. You have to have nerves of steel when someone is hurling all these bizarre, unfounded accusations at you, to nod at them and say, okay, and then walk away.
Yeah.
And not engage it. You really, I mean, and to me, I tell people, like, you know what? Forget all this meditation, breathing. Like, this is your meditation. Like, toughening up and saying, I'm not going to respond to this. It takes more mindfulness. I mean, you could probably bend a spoon with the amount of mindfulness it takes to not defend to someone who is going after you. But you know now, after 10, 15, 20, 25 years of defending yourself against this person, it gets you nowhere.
And
it's time to stop.
And how you will feel better, and I actually asked somebody that I worked with in my work on coaching them through dealing with litigation with a narcissist. I said, how did you feel before I started working with you? And this happened to be a guy who was dealing with a narcissist ex-wife, and he said, helpless and abused.
Yep.
And, you know, but what we did was we turned it around by creating a plan, a game plan, a framework, where he was actually going on the offensive.
Great. That's great.
And that's something that's almost foreign sometimes to people when they're just so used to defending, that they can actually turn around and take the controls and actually have the narcissist begging them to resolve the case.
Right.
It can happen.
Any other thoughts on do's before we turn to the don'ts?
I think that's basically what you, because we covered having a strong lawyer, which is really important. We covered being prepared. You know, the only other thing I really want to say about being prepared is don't make the mistake of going into a mediation or a settlement discussion just thinking you're just going to have a conversation. You make sure you have your leverage ready to go. Make sure you are ready to go as if you're going to court, because if you want to incentivize that person to settle and save thousands and thousands of dollars on going to court, if you go to court, you're basically throwing, you know, your future destiny to the judge. Right, and the judge might have a bad day. The judge might see things differently than you do. Judges make mistakes all the time. It's going to cost you thousands and thousands of dollars to go. So it's better if you can settle in mediation or in a settlement discussion, if you can.
Right.
But they're not going to unless you've given them the incentive to do that.
And I'm going to land it on one last do, which, and maybe it's my head as a psychologist, and I've said this, the people on my YouTube friends, I know you're going to say, again, lady, you're going to say this, realistic expectations, radical acceptance. And the reason I say this is a do is that you almost have to get up with an intention like, okay, I got to keep it real. I know what's coming my way. Because when you do that, and again, the clients I do get to work with, you know, directly in my office, what we find is that we use our therapeutic sessions as a calibration. They're like, yeah, like, I feel like I'm slipping. And I'm like, what did you think was going to happen? And they're like, oh, yeah. So it's so easy to want to put expectations about human behavior on this narcissistic person that are realistic. Like, a normal person would do this. That's not what you're dealing with. Your expectations have to be skewed to what it is you're dealing with. Like I said, that's what I do with clients. That's, you know, the therapist could do, some coaches do. Basically, you drift back to like, but a normal person. I'm like, that's not what we're dealing with, darling. Right. Let's get you right back here.
So expect that they will do all of these things.
And so when it happens, you almost chuckle to yourself, even when some of these emails come back. And sometimes I'd even have the clients send me the email and say, you're not, and I'd actually start laughing. I'm like, here we go. And it's like clockwork. I mean, it's literally like clockwork. So that clockwork can be sort of settling to us.
Coming up, more on do's and don'ts of negotiating with a narcissist. Special guest, Dr. Romney.
You may literally have to keep tears behind. You may go to the restroom and wipe them off. Anytime you do know you're going to be doing this kind of work, meeting with mediators, going to court, sitting in lawyers' offices, and having to encounter that narcissist again, keep your makeup kit and tissues and all that, because you may cry it all off in the bathroom, put it all back on. Give yourself that out, but do not let them see the crack, because they will always exploit those beautiful vulnerabilities you have, but unfortunately your vulnerabilities in their hands become weapons.
Not everyone needs full representation by an attorney on retainer. In fact, sometimes lawyering up can make things worse. At Hello Divorce, you get the best of all worlds. You get technology and legal professionals. You get some help along the way, and you get to do the parts yourself that you want to do yourself. Just $99 a month, cancel at any time. You can use their divorce navigator, think TurboTax for divorce, to prepare all of your legal forms. Right now, it's available in California, but it will be expanding soon to other states. Sign up free and get a 15-minute free intro call and access to loads of curated resources, tools, and worksheets designed to make the divorce process affordable, transparent, empowering, and successful. Use the code HELLO50 to get $50 off toward anything you'd like. Just go to HelloDivorce.com to get started today. Are you struggling with how to negotiate and win? Maybe you're dealing with a personality that's particularly challenging, like a narcissist or other high-conflict personality, and you're feeling powerless. Make sure to download my free Win My Negotiation cheat sheet at www.winmynegotiation.com.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can hear more of Rebecca's conversations with Dr. Romney, including how to fight with or litigate against a narcissist.
So you can't go at it like a rational person. Rational people say, let's just find some middle ground and we can settle and we can have an agreement. That will never happen when you're dealing with a narcissist.
And now we return to today's show.
All right, so let's talk then about the don'ts. Because I think in some ways the do's, while reassuring, the don'ts are where we can really steer people away from the rocks.
Yeah, so we talked a little bit in the previous video about boundaries. Mm-hmm. And so I would say don't let them cross your boundaries. You know, once you have set an expectation, or you've said, you know, we're only going to use this app to communicate with. Or I have exclusive occupancy of the house. You're not allowed to come over unless you email me first and get my permission. You're not allowed to show up at my office unless you ask me first. You know, whatever expectations you've set, you have to stick to it and don't allow them to cross those boundaries because that's something that that's very typical of all the narcissists. They don't believe that boundaries apply to them.
Well, that's the entitlement. The entitlement is boundaries don't come. They apply to you. And in fact, many times, the narcissist will weaponize boundaries. They'll learn that fancy word through the whole process of going through this, and they'll say, you're crossing my boundary, but they will do it organically. They've always done it. And I think, like you said, you nailed it. And we talked about this in the other videos, too, is this idea of not wanting to seem like the stick in the mud, like, well, okay, what do you mean you can't meet at Starbucks? Are you so rigid? Well, you don't want to be a rigid girl, so a rigid guy. So I think that you have to remember boundaries are an incredibly important foundation because you're going to need them going forward. The divorce is just a process setting you up for the rest of your life. And as long as you particularly have minor children, this is going to be an issue. But even if you don't, I mean, one day these kids might get married or have a graduation and on and on and on. The more you can stick to those boundaries and be consistent about them, the more they will be easier to practice in the future.
So another don't is to get emotional or feel victimized or take things personally. I mean, it's all kind of the same boat there, just feeling, you know, hurt when they lie about you or when they engage in their smear campaign, which is something they're probably going to do. You know, don't engage with that. We, you know, we talked about that, but, you know, it's a really big don't, and it's really, really important that you try to look at it from a factual point of view, almost as if you're watching a movie of your life. Oh, I just see that he just said that to her, and then you're just going to say, okay, I see, you know, Dr. Bill Eddy, who I've interviewed on my show, and so for my listeners, you can go back and watch the interviews that I have with him in the video form or on my podcast. He talks about the BIF method, which is brief, informative, friendly, and firm. But it's basically the whole premise of what he's saying is don't engage. Don't be pulled into the mud. Because as soon as you go off the handle, as soon as you're crying, screaming, yelling, fighting back, now you're in the mud with them. Now they know they have you.
And I think that this, you know, and listen, we're all saying this same thing. Bill Eddy, Dr. Romney, everybody is saying the same thing, okay? So it's that don't engage becomes this absolutely, you know, critical pivot on this. You know, I'm going to put my little bit of shrink wrap on this, which is, you know, you are feeling, okay? You are feeling. So no one can tell you don't, you know, to stop feeling. You will feel. It's how you communicate that feeling in a moment. So in many ways, what we're suggesting is actually quite superhuman. It's putting this strong tsunami of emotion behind a dam, and that it doesn't mean you'll never show it. You've got to find those places to show it. If you're in therapy of some kind, if you have trusted friends, some people find other ways to sublimate it through creative approaches, through writing, through exercise, through spirituality. There's places that they take it. I even in my retreats come up with sort of ritualized exercises we do to help people let go of some of this, because some of it you have to express it or you will get sick. But it is this sense of one place you can actually get a lot of. You can get a lot of, I don't know how to, self-possession in all of this. A relationship with a narcissist feels like you're constantly on a chaotic roller coaster that's about to go off the tracks all the time. And so you're always living in this fear, exhilaration, confusion kind of a situation. But what becomes interesting is if you can learn to be that serene self, and I often say you've got to channel this serenity. You're going to be calm. You're going to be tight. You're going to keep your answers brief. Once you practice that even just one or two times, you're going to recognize the power of it. And there's a power you feel in that moment. You may literally have to keep tears behind. You may go to the restroom and wipe them off. Anytime you do know you're going to be doing this kind of work, meeting with mediators, going to court, sitting in lawyers' offices and having to encounter that narcissist again, keep your makeup kit and tissues and all that, because you may cry it all off in the bathroom. Put it all back on. Give yourself that out, but do not let them see the crack, because they will always exploit those beautiful vulnerabilities you have. But unfortunately, your vulnerabilities in their hands become weapons.
100%. And the more you do that, the more you slap that makeup back on and go back in there, the more powerful you feel
yes,
and
you
the
do.
More confident you feel. That that fake it till you make it really is true, actually.
Yep.
So my last don't is really just don't give in and don't give up because they will try everything they can to get you to do I mean, you know, so just be patient and persevere. Keep going because it will be worth it in the end.
And I'm going to give you one last don't from my side, which you know is at the absolute central core of the thesis of my book, Should I Stay or Should I Go, is don't maintain false hope. Your relationship got this far because you came at it from a place of hope and fear. Hope that it might get better, they might change after this deadline, after the baby gets older, after this, it never happened. Okay, so don't maintain that false hope. The other thing that kept you in place was fear. I don't want to be alone forever. What will other people think? I vowed to myself I wouldn't get divorced. I'm not going to be able to afford to live, and on and on and on. That powerful alchemy of hope and fear is what keeps these relationships going. But it's critical as you go through this process, you don't maintain false hope. Part of your attorney's job is that you don't get to maintain that false hope. If you walk into your attorney's office and say, hey, I want everything and I want 100% custody, it's your attorney's job saying, sweetie, I mean, I'll get you what I can, but you ain't getting that.
Yeah, if you have an attorney that says, oh, I'll get you 100% of his paycheck for alimony and 100% custody, keep going.
Yeah, so
find a different lawyer.
So you don't want to get those false hopes, you know, maintained. And like, you know, people, I can't begin to tell you how many people out there said, I got this. And once the judge sees what a jerk he is, they're going to give me everything. And then
that
they go and sit in an attorney's office and the attorney says, here's what we're looking at. And the person will say, you mean that the judge is potentially going to let them have the kids half the time? They said, potentially, you can count on it. And for a lot of people, they said, and they're completely shattered. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Oh, that is such a good point. So I talk about divorce law versus divorce justice. Those are my little words for it. So divorce law is what's going to happen. And that's how it just gets applied. The judges, I mean, in mediation, you might be able to veer off from the law a little bit. But if you end up in front of a judge, the judge's job, they're sworn to apply the law. That's all they can do. That is all they can do. If they don't apply the law, they'll get appealed. They won't get reelected. All kinds of bad things start to happen to them. Judges get graded on how many times they get appealed. So, you know, they're not going to do anything other than apply the law. And so, you know, these people have these notions that people are going to go in and the heavens are going to open.
Well, TV
and
justice.
They're going to see what a horrible person he's been to me and he's going to give me everything.
They're not.
That is not going to happen. It's just not.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
you know, divorce justice doesn't happen. And you know, the gavels are not magic wands. They can't make the other person be a good person. They can't make them into a good dad. They can't make them into having a conscience. They can't make them care. You know, there's only so much they can order them to do.
And remember, and this is one thing I got into one of my YouTube videos you may want to check out, narcissism isn't against the law. It feels like it should be against the law, but it's not against the law. So even if that judge, and you may never hear it from her or him, might be thinking, oh my God, this guy is such a jerk. There, that is not against the law. And at the end of the day, as Rebecca's saying, that is their job, to see through the law. They are, they deliver that. And I and listen, I've heard people hear things as harsh from judges as saying, you chose this person. It's not the job of this court to correct your bad decision making. And it's devastating for people to hear. It's devastating. It really is. You know, sadly, yes, there may be a grain of truth to it. However, you know, and this is in my big fantasy Dr. Romney world, is all of what we're talking about, I wish people could see this before they even really start dating and getting married.
So
you know, I mean,
true.
That's to me, my mission is to teach people to be better gatekeepers. So you don't sit in a courtroom one day and, you know, you think about the 10,000 red flags you ignored to get you to that day
or whatever.
And then when the judge finally says to you, like, you made this choice. You know, I know that. And it is not the job of the court to fix that mess. It really isn't.
No.
But hopefully they could get it righter than they do, because they often don't get it right, frankly. And then in the next issue being that it isn't against the law. And I think it's heartbreaking. I wish it was, and if I ran the world, it would be, but I don't.
Yeah.
So,
and it's not against, you know, you can have narcissistic parents, too.
Absolutely.
And it's not grounds for taking custody from them.
It's really
so, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
So don't give in and don't give up.
No.
And don't have false hope.
Don't have false hope. So we hope, you know, again, these do's or don'ts are great, because I think there are even things, you know, some of you may actually want to take these into even your lawyer's office and say, like, you know what, I saw this. Are we hitting all these marks? You know, like, you might want to take it into your mediator's office or therapist's office, just to, you know, give you some substantiation, coming from both of our seats, having worked endless hours on exactly these kinds of cases and with these kinds of individuals and with clients struggling with this. So any last words? I mean,
We are going to be putting together some events. So watch for those. Mm-hmm. We'll be doing some online, some in person. And so make sure you check back and watch for those.
Yes, because here's the thing. I know that this series answers a lot of questions, but it opens so many more. The beauty of these events, it's a chance for it to be interactive, for you to interact with other people going through what you're going through, but then to get your bigger questions answered. Again, it's such an honor to work with Rebecca and to be able to even bring her wisdom to my own clients. So I'm very grateful for that. So again, thank you so much for tuning in on our Do's and Don'ts. Now you know, and you can apply this not just in your divorce, but honestly, with all the narcissists in your life.
Yes, thank you. Thanks so much for joining us today on the third part of this series on how to negotiate with a narcissist. It's been my thrill, my honor, and so much fun. And it really, for me, to be with Dr. Romani and learn so much from her and share ideas and for us to share our expertise with you, because we know what you're going through. We know you're going through hell. And it's hell to stay and it's hell to leave. So, you know, what we're doing with these videos is giving you some lifeline, some way of supporting you, and we hope that we've been able to do that for you today. Make sure that if you've gotten value from this, you hit the little subscribe button, you hit the notification bell. We're going to be back with more with my conversation with Dr. Romani in the next episode. So thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for stopping by and listening to this episode of Negotiate Your Best Life. I'm Rebecca Zung. Check back next Monday for more inspirational pearls of wisdom. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, I'd love if you would give it a 5-star rating and tell me what you liked in a review on iTunes. Also, be sure to grab your winning negotiation cheat sheet at winmynegotiation.com. And remember, today is a perfect day to start negotiating your best life.